Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings. Welcome inside the final hour of the week of the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Happy Friday night. It's happy if you're a Lakers fan. You're not happy if you're a Clippers fan. You're also not happy if you're Clippers players. You're happy if you're Minnesota. You're not happy if you're Purdue. This is how it works tonight.
It's well put. Nice and succinct.
We will head to Vegas coming up later on this hour. Get all the latest news as we had a big day in college football tomorrow. It's kind of Big Ten separation day. We're going to find out who's for real and who isn't, whether it's Indiana can pull the upset over Ohio State. Probably not. Northwestern, a big one, in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
but tonight, clearly, college football was owned by one really stinking bad call. Minnesota beats Purdue 34-31. And Purdue could have won this game, should have won this game. 44 seconds left. Quarterback Jack Plummer throws a touchdown that is a touchdown, right? Payne Durham catches the ball in the end zone. It's a great throw, except the referees throw the flag for pass interference, and there is clearly absolutely zero pass interference. The only thing on this play, as Durham is running off the line of scrimmage, he kind of swats with his hand as he's running,
right.
Does not touch the DB. There's no contact.
Yeah,
he runs,
I mean,
catches
but you
the
see
ball.
The extended arm, right?
Right, you see the extent, but he's kind of, it's kind of the extent as he's running. He looks like Gronk as he's running, like with his arms all pumping so DBs can't get close to him. And he kind of does a one little swipe, but it's in the way that he runs, the DB is getting close to him. He runs by the defensive back, catches the ball, and the referee throws the flag. It was insane, and as you're going to tell right now, you can hear how upset the Purdue play-by-play guys are as they call this penalty.
That pass is caught! Touchdown, Boilermakers! There's a flag down. What's the flag?
They're saying incomplete.
No, the official in the back says touchdown.
And the official up the front
said incomplete. Let's see if they're going to call maybe a pass interference against Purdue. What's the call here?
Pass interference offense, number 87.
Well, that's an interference call against Payne Durham, which wipes out what would have been the go-ahead touchdown with 52 seconds to play, and it also is a 15-yarder, so it's going to take it all the way back to the 34-yard line.
I have not seen the replay. I'm not going to say a word.
We're going to get a look at it here.
Well, I saw Minnesota grab Durham's arm.
There's nothing there.
Unbelievable.
There's nothing there.
Unbelievable.
He ran right by the defensive back and didn't even touch him.
Unbelievable.
So there it is, Learfield IMG Sports Network on the call. It was that bad a call. They are absolutely selling it like it was. And here's the bad part of it, Mike, for Purdue, okay? Because you can say, okay, it's Minnesota, Purdue, where are we at? Purdue wins this game, and they go into next week still with one loss. And they have two games coming up that are going to be rollover wins, right? They play Rutgers. They play Nebraska. So they would go into this final game of the season against Indiana at 5-1. And if they pull the big upset over Indiana, finish 6-1, they could finish at the top of the Big Ten West. Northwestern is ahead of them, but Northwestern has a tough game tomorrow against Wisconsin. One of those teams is going to lose, so immediately Purdue was going to jump even with them. And it's one more loss, and suddenly Purdue could be the Big Ten West champs. They could play for the Big Ten championship. And all these hopes and dreams, look at this season we have going on, because they would finish 5-1. They'll win the next 2 weeks, and then it would be a big game against Indiana. And now all that is gone. All that is gone because the official threw the flag there and the Big Ten. I don't know how you explain this. I really don't know how you look and go, well, the play here was just, my word, what could that be? And then the reporters look the other way and the guy leaves and runs away. Oh, what, where'd the guy go? He said, look at that. I mean, I don't know how you explain this away. I really don't. I have no idea.
Do a little Lyle Landley of look over here and he's gone.
The name's Landley. Lyle Landley.
Yeah, just it's a call, as we talk about, the arm gets extended, and what the referee thinks he sees, or based on the angle, I mean, there's really doesn't seem to be enough to where it pushed the DB off stride, right? Didn't push him back, whatever, he stays with him. but he's a step behind. And you have a great throw and a great catch, and there's nothing that says in the moment, and officials call it the same, should be calling it the same throughout the game, but we know there's obviously a little bit of premium in those final minutes of, hey, really make it count, because we're talking about deciding games here. And there's nothing that I've seen, no matter how many times you slow it down, give me a tape, whatever, that you can convince me that that call should have been made. And as you lay out the schedule, that's a lot. There's a lot that rides on that, right? That builds out for the program and the players on the field here. Obviously, momentum, a couple more games. Who knows? Maybe you find yourself in a position to play for a Big Ten title. But for the coaches, the administration, the conference, when we start talking about what these bowl games bring back, even in a weird year, there's still a lot of them getting played. So there's going to be cash for teams that make it and get chosen. Because right here, the way this season sets up, right, you're eligible by just taking the field for a bowl game, but you're still going to make your choices for ratings and involvement in the civic interest to teams that are actually good. So wins matter. Records matter. And for the coaches, as they look to build on their careers, be it Brohm or anybody else, you know what? Wins matter. 2 years from now, Brahm's in an interview. You went this. And I know it was a weird year. He's not going to be able to sit there and do a full PowerPoint presentation. Well, remember, we got screwed against Minnesota. You lost. That's it. Like, now it goes into the history books that way. But for tonight, it's the number one story in the land. It'll be the number one story, I'm sure, on the Fox kickoff tomorrow morning as the panel gets ready for a big day of action. This one's going to be hotly debated. I have no doubt either Mike Pereira or Dean Blandino or both will make an appearance to talk about it, because you got to give some clarity here. And it's a great example of why a play like this, if we're going to review everything else, let's go here. Let's start banging the drum for Kevin Warren and company to open the door there.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon, live from the Geico Studios. So that's one big story in college football. The other one going into tomorrow is really college football and the NFL, because of something going on in Pennsylvania. No, not the vote count, and we're going to figure out and certify. No, this is not about that. Is that earlier today, a ruling came out coming into tomorrow's Virginia Tech Pitt game, and this would eventually play into the Steelers and the Eagles for Sunday. Initially, a ruling came out today saying that for tomorrow's game between Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh, teams would have to wear masks both on the field and on the sideline. So while they're on the sideline and then while they were playing on the field, and as this would then go, then the next part would be, boy, the Steelers and Eagles might have to do this on Sunday. But then the rule was amended, and it comes down to, because of COVID-19, that masks are going to be required from players on the sideline, but while they're in the field of play, they don't have to wear masks. So I take a big sigh of relief for the players, because as someone who, you know, when I'm wearing my mask when I go into Target and I'm walking around, and after like 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, my God, this mask is hot. And I realize I'm not an athlete anymore, because I get out and I get into my car and I take it off and I go, oh, I feel like one of, like in the TV shows when the surgeons just get out of surgery and, like, you know, they've had a tough surgery and they take the mask off and they're breathing heavy and it's, oh, I don't know. And then McSteamy is hooking up with somebody else and it's, oh, yeah, we couldn't do our best. Somebody's got to call it. You got to call it. That's kind of how I feel. So I know that when you're talking about guys trying to run around and play on the field, as good a shape as you're in, you just can't do that. You just can't run around and play football wearing a mask, unless you came up with a mask that somehow worked for it. But just any kind of mask, even with the breathability, whatever it is, I mean, you're breathing really heavy, and all these kids would have some kind of issue as you're running constantly and you can't catch a breath and you can't take your mask off in between plays. I mean, I don't know how you would play if that was the case. Now, I'm glad that, you know, hey, we're going to do it on the sideline and fine, and I get it, and that would, you don't know what that's going to wind up helping, because let's say, you know, you're a third string wide receiver that doesn't play a lot and you spend the game hanging out to one of your friends who's a third string DB and doesn't play. If you're both wearing masks, if one of you has COVID, maybe the other one doesn't get it. So I get that part of it. But on the field, I don't know how you do it. I just know how I feel. I'm sure you feel the same way when you're with that, when you have that mask on for so long, it's difficult to breathe. I mean, I'm getting used to it more and more now, but when I get out of a store and get in my car, I'm like, oh, all right, thank goodness I got that taken care of. Right, now I got to wait and then put it back on if I go back in someplace else. It's really difficult. And I'm someone that doesn't really, you know, work out as much as an athlete does.
Yeah, I get out and I do my walks and I'm on the treadmill in my garage. You know, on the treadmill in the garage, I'm not wearing a mask. I should probably get one of those training masks, you know, with the oxygen levels and whatever to try to, you know, increase your lung capacity and stuff. But that's more just an actual workout thing as opposed to COVID relief. Look, you want to make everybody wear a clear mask, like instead of the tinted thing that DK Metcalf had on yesterday that obviously obscured his vision on a would-be touchdown reception. I'll, you know, that's fine, right? You know, guys, as they're running around and inadvertent as screaming at each other and, you know, the spit starts flying as they start popping their peas and everything else, then I'll hear it. But as for the other, it's like you've put a bunch of rules in place to follow these protocols, and guys have to pass tests. Are they 100%? And isn't there, you know, we know there's the rolling period of when you may have gotten it to when it presents in a test. I stipulate to that. But you've also gone through the rigors of testing and day after day to suddenly in the middle of a season decide you're going to change the rule. No, to my knowledge, there's been no jump in scientific breakthrough about the transmission. Right? I mean, I don't know. You can correct me if I'm wrong, folks, at Swollen Dome, if you want to do that. And certainly Pennsylvania is one of the disputed places, not just because of, you know, the election, but just in terms of how things have been administered in this regard throughout. So this seems pretty arbitrary to try to enforce as the season goes on. Let's throw this in now. You want to say, hey, the coaches are a bad example because they're on the sideline and screaming at referees with the mask off? Fine. You can talk about that. But as for the players on the field, I don't know that, A, you're stopping anything by putting the masks on, and two, you may be inhibiting their ability to breathe. And especially for the big offensive linemen, isn't that one of the big concerns for them, is to try to take the best care of them all the time? So if you've allowed them to play and not forced them to, I don't know, take up residence in another state to get their games in, then I think you get through the rest of the season without trying to add this in. You find the technology that makes it seamless and doesn't restrict oxygen and potentially cause problems in that regard, I'll hear it. But as it stands right now, I don't know what the logic is behind this.
Well, I get the logic because it's the way COVID is jumping and going through this new phase now. With the, you know, it's the winter second wave that, you know, is deadly. It's growing in every state, and I get that everybody wants to do something to stop it. It's a weird thing to get to this point with teams where with all the testing going on and all that. But it's about the optics of, hey, we got to make sure that everybody is to it, because if you see a football team that's really got to do it, that tells everybody watching, well, I got to wear a mask when I go out.
Yeah,
because masks are going to help.
Also,
masks
are going to help. But that's also just telling your viewing audience and the residents of your state, and I say this with all due respect, that you're dumb and you don't see the difference between guys getting tested to go do their jobs every day and what you're doing in your own personal lives.
Well, this is also a world we live in where people don't think the virus is real. You know, so I mean, you want to say that, I get that, but how many people do think that still COVID is not real and it's made up and they're believing all the lies because you read anything online? It's real. Wear a mask. It helps. So I think that I don't think they thought we'd have to fight that part of the battle, but we do. And maybe that's why we are where we are, because people can't just understand science and that this is real and wearing a mask helps. And that's why we're fighting where we are right now, because people refuse to wear a mask. The one who refuse to wear a mask are the ones who are loudest about, well, why do we have to wear a mask? Because you're not wearing one. I mean, this is why it's happening. So I think a lot of it, look, we're making up as we go along, but I would think I would go with those two reasons why it's okay. We need to do something like this because we have to make sure we appear and we look like we're fighting it wherever we can, because you don't know how that's going to influence anything as it goes down the road. Twitter at How About a Fresca, Mike at Swollen Dome. Hey, you got your thoughts right there. Phone number is 877-99 on Fox. We're going to head to Vegas. We also have our big upset special picks for the week in the National Football League. Mike Harmon's got some hot takes on his upset specials. We got it coming up straight for you. Keep it here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon live from the Geico Studios. We got a big day in college football tomorrow. We had a big night tonight. We had a big night in NBA free agency. What does Vegas have to say about this? Joining us now on the hotline, he is the lead actor on Fox Sports 1's Lock It In show. You see it Monday through Friday. Former odds maker at Caesar's Palace, friend of the show, Todd Furman. Todd, what's happening tonight, man?
Living the dream, gentlemen. Trying to process some of the marquee matchups that'll take place in college football tomorrow and trying to make sure I have the same faces in new places scorecard updated for the NBA, which I probably won't be able to wrap my head around until Monday.
All right, so Vegas is still standing after the bad OPI call on Purdue that gave Minnesota the win?
Yeah, it's not the kind of call on a Friday night, even in a marquee Big Ten game, that's really going to bring the house to its knees. Obviously, it does change a little bit of perspective in terms of the integrity of officiating in that kind of spot. A little bit unusual to see an OPI call like that change the outcome. But this was a game that was really interesting to watch the line movement all week. You had Purdue bet out to as much as a 2.5, 3-point favorite. Number swung all the way back in Minnesota's favor. Then, of course, PJ Fleck shares that 20 players have COVID. Rondale Moore plays. Back to Purdue, a short favorite, and ultimately it falls with Minnesota winning the game 34-31, go figure.
We were talking about schedule watching, Todd, for the Big Ten and trying to look at what happens down the road towards a Big Ten title game should Purdue win here, right? A matchup with Indiana down the road. But that's moot for now. We push that to the side. Ohio State with a huge game against the aforementioned Indiana Hoosiers tomorrow. What are we expecting here? And, you know, is there any noise in any numbers that we're looking at for Indiana?
Well, I think we're expecting a blowout, honestly, Harmon, not to undersell the question. When we look at the number here at 20.5, it speaks more to Ohio State's dominance of late and the NFL caliber talent they have on their roster compared to an Indiana team that's been outstanding early on. But for a guy that was as high on the Hoosiers as anybody coming into the season, you look at the schedule of opponents that they faced, I don't know that the quality wins are there right now. Beating Penn State looked great on the surface week one. Beating Michigan would have been outstanding before the season, knowing that Indiana had really struggled. All of a sudden you beat Michigan State and you look at the rest of the resume and go, okay, now it's time to step up in class. Michael Penix has been tremendous. The problem for Indiana is they've shown no semblance of a ground game. And while they have three talented receivers in the likes of Wop Fillior, Peyton Hendershot, and Ty Freifogel, Ohio State can match that. But I think the Buckeyes do have some concerns in their secondary. Sean Wade hasn't turned into lockdown corner early on. They expected him to be when Jeffrey Okuda went to the next level. So we'll get a pretty good idea of where these two teams are. I made the game 19.5, so I don't see a whole lot of wiggle room one way or another. But I do think this game can go over the total because if Ohio State's able to build a lead, Justin Fields won't take his foot off the gas, and I think this Hoosiers offense is capable of scoring points. But keep in mind, guys, Indiana may be 7-2 against the number the last 9 meetings between these two teams. None of those games have been decided by 21 points or less.
All right, Todd, we got a couple interesting games in the Pac-12 tomorrow. We got USC, Utah. We also have UCLA, who should play every game on Sunday now, against Oregon, number 11, undefeated. And just something I wanted to throw this out there. If I said, all right, I want to get the odds on if USC goes undefeated, right? They finish 6-0, they win the Pac-12. USC as a playoff team in college football, what are the odds for that?
You know, if you look around now, and I haven't seen them on FanDuel, FoxBet, or any of the other major legal books, 3.5, 4 to 1 was one of the prices that I saw for SC to get there, and I actually think that's selling them a little bit at the bottom of the market. But in reality, I mean, you look at their performances against Arizona and Arizona State, they look nothing like a team that deserves a seat at the table alongside Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, who you figure are the four front runners to get to the college football playoff. But Keaton Slovis, we know, can be as dynamic as any quarterback in the country. And if Todd Orlando is able to figure out the defense, sure, USC undefeated, especially if they have a dominant win against, say, an Oregon in the conference championship, is going to be an attractive sell. The problem, though, you have a couple of injuries that are starting to mount, some players that have opted out. And would it stun anybody if they went into Rice-Eccles Stadium tomorrow night and lost outright to Utah? Not in the least, knowing that it's one of the biggest coaching mismatches you're going to get in the Pac-12 year in, year out, with Kyle Whittingham on one side and Clay Helton on the other. The biggest question for Utah, how much did the cancellation of their first two games and observing COVID protocol impact some of their preparations for a game of this magnitude right out of the gates?
Todd Furman, our guest, joins us every Friday night previewing the games of the weekend, college and pro. Fox Bet Live, you see him on FS1 every day, every afternoon, breaking it all down. And you had a huge prop night to open week 11. I saw that on Twitter, retweeted that one, at Todd Furman. So let's see if we can keep the hot streak going, Todd. And the game that really is a lot of attention because of the quarterback news, Drew Brees to the injured list, thinking it's going to be Jameis, and then all of a sudden the reports are it's Taysom Hill. What did it do to the number, and what do you think the value is?
Yeah, honestly, I was stunned by that news, to be quite frank. When you look at Jameis Winston and his skill set compared to Taysom Hill, there's no doubt that Jameis being described as erratic with the football during his time in Tampa probably is an understatement. But at the same time, he came in, he actually looked more comfortable in the role of backup quarterback, at least what we saw last week against the 49ers, than Teddy Bridgewater when he had to come in a pinch against the Los Angeles Rams. But Sean Payton is a smart coach. He's also a very stubborn man, from what I've been told. And when you pay Taysom Hill as much money as you do, you want to take your new toy out of the garage and show him off to the rest of the world when opportunity is created. And I think that's what we have here. The problem for the Saints is there is no breathing room atop the NFC South right now. You lose this game to the Falcons and the Bucks win on Monday night, suddenly that margin of error has gone out the window. And with growing speculation that we're not quite sure how healthy Alvin Kamara will be, missing some practice time this week with a foot injury, let's see what Taysom has in the tank. But for Sean to come out and say, hey, look, there are no packages designed for Jameis, I don't know if that's ego or arrogance, but the reality of it is Jameis has thrown for 300 yards in three of his last four games against this Falcons defense. And Raheem Morris, well, he's going to sell out to stop the run and force Taysom Hill to beat his defense over the top.
Yeah, I think there's something up with that wording, the way it went out, that maybe things aren't all as sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows with Jameis. Last one for me, Todd. What are the better odds you would give me? That the Jets beat the Chargers Sunday, or the Knicks actually sign a good free agent? What's better odds?
You know what's funny with the Knicks? I actually like the Obi Toppin pick. I think it gives him somebody that's a little bit more polished coming out of college instead of the way that, say, the Bulls went, taking a very young kid that's raw in Patrick Williams. But the Knicks in free agency, I'm not sure how it's an attractive destination for anybody to go play for a dysfunctional franchise with a head coach that has some question marks in terms of how he's handled talent in the past in Tom Thibodeau. So when I look at the Knicks, I think there might be a better chance that Syracuse can win the ACC than the New York Knicks can win the NBA title in the next 10 years.
We're one and eight.
And you may have the worst offensive line in the entire ACC, but you're still probably closer to getting to an NCAA college football playoff than the Knicks are to winning a title. Because the one thing we've seen, at least Syracuse has a win over Clemson over the last 3 years. The Knicks ain't getting close to beating any team with a pulse in a best of seven series.
You can follow him on Twitter at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman. Check him out Monday through Friday. Lead actor on Fox Sports One's Lock It In. Todd, as always, buddy, appreciate you. Have a great weekend, my friend. We'll talk to you.
Always a pleasure, gents. Enjoy the games this weekend. And Harm, best of luck to your beloved Wildcats as they keep the dream alive, or if they can, against the Wisconsin Badgers.
Go Cats. That's my guy. Good, clean American fun tomorrow afternoon.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
So a huge night in the NBA as free agency began. And we spent a lot of time going over the first big night The first big move was Montrezl Harrell going from the Clippers to the Lakers, which is a home run for the Lakers, because not only do they go get a guy who's going to bring them instant offense, sixth man of the year, they weaken the Clippers, and now I wonder if the Clippers are going to have a much different look, and you're going to see a bigger purging of the roster than we thought it was going to be, because clearly Montrezl Harrell would be a guy you would want to build around. But so many things went on in that Clipper locker room. It's like a murder mystery whodunit. Like, who's really innocent? Who's guilty? You don't know. It depends on... It's like watching Knives Out. Like, okay, well, I think you're innocent. No, maybe not. Maybe you're... No, maybe you... No, maybe you... No, no. I mean, that's what it is with the Clippers. I don't know. Is Paul George really that bad a guy? Can they really not stand him that much? Or is it, hey, you know, we can't stand Paul George, but still he's a really good player? I mean, that's where we're at with the Clippers now, and I wonder if it's not going to be something where, hey, we are just going to get rid of a lot of what we have, because we don't think what we currently had was going to, with another year of seasoning, going to be a team that could win the NBA Finals when it comes down to it. So I really wonder if that's what's going to happen with them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of shuffling around, right? New coach, new attitude. But we'd heard all the stuff about not having a vocal leader in the locker room, and I proffered the theory earlier tonight as this went down that Montrezl Harrell was kind of looking over, and LeBron James posted out, you know, social media of the two of them clowning during bubble time and everything else. So he probably got a look-see of what was happening in the Lakers locker room, not just the title, but just that it always seemed that these guys actually wanted to be around each other, right? Waiting for each other after interviews, all of those things, hanging out. Off-court time was reported throughout this, that, you know, there was some sense of camaraderie and a little bit more than just, hey, show up at the court when it's practice time. So to that end, you know, the grass being greener and wanting to try to get your chip, that's the other part of it too. But if you can find yourself staying in the same building once we actually get back to playing home games, and you have a shot at a title, and it's a better place, and maybe mentally a better place, and a better atmosphere, then yeah, it all wins. I made the Jerry Maguire analogy, and I think that's the apt one of, hey, can we have something like that? You know, something like those guys have over here, because this speaks more to the mentality of, all right, we're just going to team up, and it's just going to roll, and just follow my lead on the court, which was one of the big problems that was cited towards the end of the bubble, was that there wasn't a lot of togetherness. And then you had Doc Rivers, who really wasn't doing anything to quell any of that, you know, any misgivings anybody had. And you saw how it ended up breaking up what people thought was going to be a perennial title contender. And so you lose a huge chip here. An 18-7 a game guy goes down to the other locker room. Yeah, huge loss for the Clippers tonight. In addition to, I mean, you can take either side of it.
Yeah.
Right? As our buddy Ben Maller always says, the better story's in the losing locker room. Clippers lose Montrezl Harrell. Go.
You know, and another example really quick of things, everything coming up Lakers right now is, look, during the bubble, what did we see? The Lakers were the best team. We saw the Clippers have problems, but who do we talk about? Are these are the next two teams that are going to own the West in a couple of years? Denver and Utah, right? They had everything going on. They got young superstars. They're hungry. Their rosters are kind of deep. But to show you everything coming up, Lakers, Jeremy Grant is now leaving the Denver Nuggets. This happened a little while ago, agreeing to a 3-year, $60 million deal with the Detroit Pistons. And clearly, you know, look, Jeremy Grant was a 12-8 guy during the season last year, so it seems like that's a lot of money for Jeremy Grant. But the Pistons are hoping it's the Jeremy Grant you saw down the stretch and in the playoffs, who had times when he actually took over games. This is a guy that's, you know, Kyuso, he's the one guy that's just getting better and better every year, and you can see it in his play, and they're hoping we're gaining him on the ascent, and he has that breakthrough year with a little bit more responsibility, because he had huge games in the playoffs, and he was that guy that, hey, Denver can really help build. You're building around him and Jokic, and it's phenomenal, and Murray, and look at what they have here. Now, they lost a big key here in Jeremy Grant. Now, there's a rumor that maybe there could be a sign-and-trade with Blake Griffin, but according to all Nugget sources, that's not happening. Blake Griffin's not going to Denver, so this is another great night for the Lakers and a rough one for Denver, because they lost a guy who was just on the ascent and could be, you know, maybe not a big three type player, but boy, he could be a phenomenal guy for a lot, because he's young and he's just getting better and better every single year.
I love chaos, right? Mm-hmm. And it gets the people of Detroit excited. People on Detroit talk radio have, you know, something, a blip. There's a famous Simpsons bit where Monty Burns doesn't have a telephone or whatever, and he's still getting stock and updates through the old ticker, mm-hmm. which he hasn't checked in a long time. The people of Detroit are like, we've got something to talk about. Somebody signed with us. Let's go.
Twitter it out about a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon live from the Geico Studios. Coming up next, our official upset special picks of the week in the National Football League. Who do we like? Well, we'll tell you. Keep it right here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. Live from the Geico Studios, where still at this hour, NBA free agent signings are coming in. Shams Charani of The Athletic just reported that the Nuggets have replaced Jeremy Grant with Jamichael Green. So not quite the player they gave up, because as we talked about, Jeremy Grant being a next-level player, but okay, now we can replace him with Jamichael Green. And all right, it's still a great night for the Lakers and other West teams, because the Nuggets aren't as good as they were. Mm-hmm. But this is now the second player, Mike, that we've watched the Clippers let leave in free agency. They let Montrezl Harrell go tonight. Jamichael Green goes as well. He was a role player, but he played 20 minutes sure. a game for them. And you know, we talked about it earlier in the show, and now it looks like it's coming to fruition. It looks like the Clippers roster is getting blown up. And is Paul George next in a big trade? Is something else happening? But clearly, you know, this is a really bad night for the Clippers. And like I said, the Lakers are just, you know, rolling sevens all night tonight.
Yeah, no, it's really separate from the pack, right? You're wondering, and it's a Rob Pelinka victory lap night, right? From Magic Johnson out and tweeting and everybody, a lot of Laker honks. That are tangential media folks banging the drum and going, hey, everybody wanted him fired. I'm like, I bet I can go back at your mentions and find you looking to oust him a couple years ago. Okay? When it went bad, it went really bad. Before LeBron James showed up, there was some darkness. And even in LeBron James' first year there was still a lot of darkness as to what was going on with that roster. And now you look at the reshifting, the Clippers losing a couple of big, at least surface-wise and on the court, glue guys. What was going on in that locker room? I'm sure there's a tell-all book to be had from somebody. But, yeah, it's another big loss. So you watch the dominoes fall. Two of your biggest opponents in the Clippers and Nuggets get weakened in this process. Yeah, very huge first night of free agency going into a weekend. Just absolutely blessings and Thanksgiving celebrated by more Laker fans tonight.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome. Time now for our upset special picks of the weekend in NFL and college football. We do it every week. Our world famous upset specials. 1-1 last week I was. 12-8 on the season. So,
nice,
okay.
Nice. Yeah.
I really had a bad one. I had a really bad beat last week where I would have been 2-0 for the third week in a row. But it happened, and I take the L and I move on. My first upset special, I am taking the Jaguars getting 11 against Pittsburgh. This seems like insanity.
Duval!
But what have we seen for the Steelers so far this season? They play to their opponent. If they're playing a tough team, they'll play him tough. If they're playing a bad team, that team hangs around. And Jake Luton has been able to move the Jaguars' offense. Maybe suddenly Gardner Minshew wasn't that good, and it's a great system they have going on in Jacksonville, because here's a guy that nobody thought could do anything. They nearly upset the Packers last week. The Jaguars will score points. 11 is a lot. I'm taking the Jags.
I like it. I'm looking at Philly and Cleveland. No Myles Garrett. Carson Wentz should then have a little bit of time to operate. Receiving core getting healthy, yes. Even those veteran guys that we've kind of derided the roster construction. But opportunity knocks here against the Cleveland secondary. Zach Ertz is back in the window to be activated. Doug Peterson said some discouraging things, so maybe another week. But you still have Dallas Goedert, who did return to action. Between him, Sanders, and that receiving core, I'm going to look for Philly to pull the upset on the road.
My second one, I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons getting 4.5 against the Saints. Atlanta's getting hot. Like I told you, Atlanta and Minnesota, these are two teams that started out bad. They're not bad teams. They started out bad. And here comes Atlanta. Taysom Hill, who knows what you're going to get from this guy, right? The guy, he's thrown less than 20 passes his entire NFL career. It's going to take a little bit for the Saints offense to get going. And Atlanta's offense is humming along a little bit. It's 4.5 points is just a little bit too much for me to say, all right, I think New Orleans will get away with this, because I think Atlanta's going to win on the field. So if I think a team's going to win on the field and I'm getting 4.5 points, I will take that because, you know, listen, I like being able to win on the field when I take my upset specials, but I will, of course, take the 4.5 points.
Never going to turn the points away. And I've got one that's got a lot of points, and it's a game that's curious because as bad as the Jets are, and the last iteration we saw of them didn't look too bad, right? Put up some points, stretching the field, a little bit of Jamison Crowder. Denzel Mims is out on the field doing some Denzel Mims things. Mm-hmm. More of Perine, whatever the case is. Chargers are favored by 9. I don't like the number, so plus the 9, I love it. But the gut also tells me the way they've collapsed in second halves, the door is open for the Jets to come in and screw themselves by winning the game outright.
Buddy, if they can blow a 40-3 lead in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, that would be something special for even the Chargers to do.
Well, you're saying there's a chance.
You're talking about a team that's going to be starting their top 3 cornerbacks with a grand total of 2 NFL starts against the number 3 offense in the NFL. Oh, my God.
So they'll play aggressively.
Herbert could throw for 500 by halftime.
From your lips to God's ears, and you make Frostburg a happy man on a Friday.
Twitter at How About a Fresca, Mike at Swollen Dome. Download our Best Of podcast on iTunes. Jonas Knox is next, Fox.